This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Football is a rough sport, and broken bones and torn ligaments aren't the only risk. A growing concern about concussions has led doctors to take a closer look at the long-term damage possible from repeated blows to the head. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill is participating in a new initiative aimed at helping to evaluate and treat former NFL players. Specifically, the university's Brain and Body Health Program will partner with the NFL Players Association in its new program called The Trust. Dr. Daniel Coffer is a division chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at UNC and one of the doctors in the program. Welcome, Dan. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Also with us is Kathleen Seifert, executive director of I-9 Sports in South Durham and Orange Counties. Kathleen, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Dan, tell us about this program at UNC.
So this program is an initiative that I think it's fair to say that we came up with the idea, we being Kevin Guskowitz and others who have been studying the long-term effects of concussions for over a decade now. And the motivation for this program really arose out of the research that was done as a way of translating the research into practical clinical care. I think that was the basic motivation for it. And when the NFLPA learned of this, they liked that idea a lot. So to the point where they formalized it and made it a nationwide program, with UNC being one of the three major centers across the country that are participating in this program.
So what do we know? I mean, obviously concussion, not a good thing, but recently we've learned that it's worse than we thought, particularly in the long run.
I think there is a huge gap in our knowledge between what happens with an acute concussion and how the long-term chronic traumatic encephalopathy, as it's called now, may arise. The acute concussion syndrome really involves symptoms and signs that are very different than the long-term sequelae. So there's a huge question mark between how repetitive brain injury can predispose people to having long-term degenerative brain disorders. We're only beginning to scratch the surface of that. And I think having programs like our clinic will help us get very useful information about what to look for in the research world that may be most useful.
I heard you say encephalopathy. I got that almost right. Anyway, I broke that down, and part of that has to do with swelling. And what I want to know is if swelling is the only long-term effect, because there are lesions and tears. And I mean, what are we looking for, I guess, is my big question.
So what we're looking for, and this is true of virtually every degenerative brain disorder, are misfolded proteins that accumulate in different parts of the brain. And what define the different degenerative disorders, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and other degenerative disorders, are what proteins are misfolded in what different places. And chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, that comes off a little easier, that overlaps significantly with Alzheimer's disease, and it also overlaps with another rarer disease called frontal temporal degeneration. And the latter disease, FTD, as it's called, is more commonly associated with the type of behavioral changes that are now associated with CTE.
But how do you pull them apart? How do you know one was caused by a concussion 30 years ago, or several concussions, and another is a kind of a form of Alzheimer's?
Well, you hit it on the head. We don't know that.
You should pardon the expression.
And that's the – yes, actually, that's not a good – I misspoke on that one. But we don't know. And how – and brain injuries, repetitive brain injuries at one time in life can 10 or 20 or 30 years later lead to a degenerative brain disorder is just really not known. I think that we need to pay attention to things, and I think new techniques in brain imaging will help move the field forward very quickly, both in the setting of acute brain injury, about when we really need to take somebody away. We're not there yet, but there's active research in that, as well as helping us determine who is at risk for long-term problems.
Well, Kathleen, tell us about your organization, because as we said before, concussions are bad any old time, and that's a little bit what you're focused on, right?
Yeah. At I-9 Sports, we are a youth sports organization that really at the forefront is safety for us. And I'm a mother of four, so I take it even, I think, a little more seriously sometimes with that. So what we have in place for not just our flag football programs, but also our soccer, our basketball, even our cheerleading program, is a policy of when in doubt, sit them out. So what that means is if somebody takes a hard hit, whether it be, it used to be traditionally we thought it had to be head-to-head. Now we are realizing even just having your head hit the floor could be a possible concussion. So we train our staff as well as our coaches on when in doubt, we're going to sit them out. We just would rather err on the side of safety. As the doctor has said, we don't know. And so I'd rather just be safe.
When in doubt, sit them out. But that's the question of what happens after they get hit in the head. But then the question of how to limit these blows to the head. And you talked about flag football. And now there's increasing concern that maybe we shouldn't allow kids to play tackle football at such an early age.
There is research supporting that. I'm a mom, and when my son wanted to come play flag football or football, I said, oh, you're skinny, you're little, let's try flag football. And it has been wonderful. They can learn all the techniques and learn how to run and learn how to catch and throw, which is the basics of football. And then when their brains, the research I've seen is it's seeming more like age 14 as they're able to handle it maybe a little bit more. So then let's go to that and using some of that brute strength for that then.
Well, let's talk about brain development, Dan. Does it make a difference to a young brain or an old brain how they get hit and when?
Well, that's also a really good question that we wish we had more knowledge about. I was just going to say before, there have been many more news articles and headlines and radio shows and TV shows about CTE than there have been really solid, hard science published papers. We need to change that balance. And then I think, well, I would be in a better position to answer that question. I think we know that young brains in general bounce back better than older brains do. But what may work against that to some degree is that young brains may not be able to tolerate as much stress as an older brain. So it may bounce back better up to a point, but if you get past a certain point of injury or trauma, then it may not bounce back.
Well, and bouncing back to their current position or where they are now, is only one of the issues for a developing brain because it may also affect the development going forward.
And I think that's a really interesting perspective that we're and others are taking up in looking at the relationship between how development how early childhood development can have the consequences and implications it may have for later life brain disorders. There are changes that are evident in infants' brains that may be predictive of later developing Alzheimer's disease. So I think the more we understand about how brain development and brain degeneration interface and the interaction between them, I think that will shed a lot of light in this area.
Then you can sort out what was the result.
But one of my concerns that you raise here is I don't think we really know how early childhood trauma in the teens in particular, when people get to the weight that they can cause serious injuries, how teenage brain injuries may impact brain development. And the frontal lobes are the part of the brain that take the longest to develop. And if it suffers injuries before full development, it's not clear how that may affect the long-term brain
And the frontal lobe
function.
is the first to the scene of the accident, as they say in police work. So now, Kathleen, we're talking about football, but soccer as well. Just heading the ball in soccer has been shown to cause some pretty serious issues.
Yeah, and so with our soccer program, we don't teach heading at all. We have decided it's not worth the risk, and so what we do is, once again, we're teaching the basics of the sport. There's a lot of footwork. There's a lot of passing. There's a lot of other ways to control the ball in soccer. And I loved earlier we were discussing how the doctor had played soccer, and he goes, it just didn't seem right to head
put your head in front of a projectile.
Yeah. And that thing is a rock by the time it comes to you. I mean, it's not even soft laying on the ground, but with the velocity that it's coming to your head, it's a rock.
Yeah, right? Even at the young ages. I mean, playing against even some of these 3 and 4 year olds, there have been times that they kick it. I'm like, ooh, that kind of hurt me on my shins, you know. So could only imagine on my head.
Well, let's talk about some of the, because now we're sort of raised this important issue in terms of the gap in our knowledge between normal brain development and how it can go awry all by itself and lead to some of these chronic conditions later on. The impact of concussion and trauma, and we don't know we can't really sort it all out. But let's just focus on trauma now. It isn't just concussion. I think there's research in military, particularly in the military, to show that the snapping of the head, the torque that comes from particularly service personnel who were exposed to an explosion, for instance, and may not have been hurt, have some brain damage as a result or tissue damage.
I think that's a very interesting observation. In boxers, for example, what used to be called dementia pugilistica is really an earlier version of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And boxers are more predisposed to having motor Parkinsonian findings like Muhammad Ali, whereas the pro football players who have been studied, and it's been less than 100 of them who've been identified with this disorder, have a relatively low risk of developing Parkinsonism. So it may be that different head movement will predispose different parts of the brain to be more vulnerable to long-term changes.
Well, and that also raises the question of what you're looking for. I mean, clearly cognitive differences, motor differences, those are obvious, but differences in emotion and subtle things that you're not even looking for might be part of the pathology.
And those are much more difficult to measure in the clinic. We have pencil and paper tests to measure memory and language and drawing ability, but to measure emotional behavior, social interaction, the ability to have empathy for someone, those are things that we're just beginning to get a handle on how to measure in a clinical arena. And we're actually doing that in our NFL Brain and Body Health Clinic, which I think will be very, very enlightening to us.
So tell us what else is going to happen in the clinic. Well, who are you going to see and what kinds of treatments do you have planned?
So I give the NFLPA a lot of credit because I think they're taking a very proactive view. We're not going to wait for people to sit around and develop this disorder. We want to get all the people who are at risk evaluated now and to really be educated about medicine, because most of these people's experience with doctors is to make them football fit, to make them gladiators on the field. And we, to a large degree, our multidisciplinary team really educates them about there's a difference between football fit and fit for life. And our goal is to make them fit for life. And we emphasize basic things like lifestyle factors, sleeping well, having a good diet, exercising on a regular basis, not abusing your body like they have in many cases have done to achieve the level of success that they did. So we're in many ways retraining them about how to be, you know, kind of boot camp for life. And I think the NFLPA deserves credit for supporting this.
PA meaning the Players Association. So who are you going to see? You're going to see young players
We're seeing people who have just retired recently. We're seeing people who retired 30 or 40 years ago. Basically, the NFLPA wants every former player who meets certain criteria to go through a very comprehensive brain and body health evaluation. And what I particularly like about this clinic compared to my memory disorders clinic, where I typically see people with Alzheimer's disease and other degenerative disorders, we're able to be more proactive here. We're catching people earlier on where we're seeing just very early signs that may be early signs of a degenerative disorder. But I think that's ultimately the pathway that we need to take. The prevention is ultimately going to be the best strategy for dealing with these disorders. And the earlier we can identify and intervene in these degenerative processes, I think the better the long-term outcomes will be.
So you mentioned sleep is one. What are some of the other things they can do?
I think one of the things that is endemic in these people is that just with all the press attention that has been given to the half dozen or so people that have committed suicide, if they're in their 30s and misplaced their keys, they think they have the disease and it's game over, that they have nothing to live for. And that can create a vicious cycle where they get anxious and depressed, and that makes it harder for them to do things, and they can really dig themselves into a big hole from that, just the psychology of that. And this is one of the very important things that we do to say, well, you're having this problem, but A, B, or C could be causing that. So let's check out A, B, and C. And most of the time it is A, B, or C that is causing the problem.
Would there be any benefit, and would you have anything to offer players who are currently on the field in terms of prevention? I mean, apart from what the league might do in terms of rules, just in personal behavior.
So I would advocate common sense, and I think this applies at all levels. You know, competition is good at any level. It's good unless it's taken to an extreme where people will do reckless things. And I think not going out of your way to bang your head. You know, in the past, it was a sign of a macho sign where people would bang their head against the lockers to show how tough they are. That's the kind of attitude that I think is going to get people into trouble. So I think the more that we can dispel that macho attitude and get rid of that, to say that's not a good thing to do for your brain, I think the better off people will be.
Doc, have you seen a football game? Common sense is not what wins games. I will just tell you that. But okay, I take your point. I take your point, and it is a good one, certainly. Laura, we got an email just recently, and someone wanted to know how concussions are assessed. How do we know on the sideline, you know, in the heat of battle, if you've had a concussion?
Some of the things that we do is we have just taken the lead from Chapel Hill and some information that they have given it to us. And so it's, are they seeming a little groggy? Are they seeming a little off? We've had to tweak it a little bit because one of the questions is, do you know the score? Well, a 3 and 4 year old, no, they're not going to know the score of the game. So just kind of asking some questions that they might know the answers to. And if you're getting some funny answers to it, then go ahead and sitting them out. Honestly, for us, if it looked hard or makes you go, yeah, ooh, we say, you know what? Let's have a seat. Let's see how you're doing. Let's see if a headache develops. Let's just wait and see.
Yeah. Are there good assessment tools, Dan, for concussions, again, in the heat of battle?
I think it's a work in progress. I think there are good tools now, given the level of attention that has been drawn to this area. I think there's even more development going on into developing the tools that will be most sensitive to changes and that will be able to be administered right in the heat of battle, so to speak, both on the football and sports fields as well as in the military field of action.
It seems to me the diagnostic technology has gotten a lot better, too. We're really able to see what's happening.
Much of this now is on an app that can be done with an iPad or smartphone. So I think the technology is really going to, I think, play a big role in making this available to more people.
Kathleen, you are working with young people and trying to institute this whole culture around sports and take a look at some of the other really important key skills that go into the game apart from the brute force. Are you getting any kind of traction? Because, again, if the system, you know, if college players still demand this level of aggression, mm-hmm, dads and moms are going to push their kids to be aggressive. They're not going to let them play flag football if they have visions of a scholarship in the NFL in their mind. So are you seeing more traction and more willingness on the part of some of the big players to sign on to this kind of thing?
Oh, yes, definitely. We have seen an increase overall in our flag football registrations throughout the nation with I-9 Sports. And so to me, that's definitely saying my generation of parents are saying, you know what, you've got one brain, so let's wait and let's have fun and learn the sport.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. Kathleen Seifert is the executive director of I-9 Sports in South Durham and Orange County. Kathleen, good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
And Dr. Daniel Coffer is division chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and one of the doctors in the program. Thank you for being on the program
as
well. Coming up, we're going to hear from Irish tenor Anthony Kearns. Stay with us.
Now I know it's hard for you, my love, to ever understand the love I shared for these brave men, the love for my dear land. But when glory called me to his side down in the deep I had to leave my own sick bed.